doing it. Hey, you know what I found?
Oh.
Oh, there it is.
We're back.
Hey.
Welcome to Doc Talk. What is up, one and all? Welcome back to a brand new edition, a brand new panel. It is Thursday night. It is Doc Talk night. Come with us, y'all, as we go on a fishing journey. Tonight, a little bit different. Got a new topic tonight from this esteemed panel. Let's go around the room. We'll start at the upper corner here on the one side of me. And, we'll let this dude kick it off. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you hail from, what kind of kayak you be fishing in, sir.
All right. What's up, guys? Jesse Laspier, living in Palm Coast, Florida. Fishing out of the Blue Sky Boatworks 360 Angler in the Tiger Shark color. So still loving that orange. I'm loving the playa, but I'm going to hold on to that orange for as long as I can until it's time to change.
There you go. Next up on the panel, we're going to the bottom screen in the hot seat, moving to the hot seat.
What's going on? I'm Jake Penny, a.k.a. Half Cent, and I'm fishing out of the NAR FD in the red color because we're Team Red Boat over here. And, I'm out of Houston, Texas, fishing any of the Bassmaster Series stuff. I know it's weird. I'm talking about reds, but here I am talking about some other stuff today.
Moving to the hot seat, we've got the one, the only.
Dustin Nichols right here from the armpit of Texas, Victoria, the crossroads. Fishing out of a NAR FD in Playa. So you pick in Playa. And then I have a Take 2 in the Forest colorway that I run for my live weigh-in events that I have to haul a live well with me. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Man, I was wondering who was going to comment tonight because Jesse's here with us. And like he usually does, like 50% of the comments on these things. So it's kind of weird having Jesse.
See who
fills
the shoes up. Miss Jean might be on. We'll see who else jumps on there.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know.
You're just excited. Excited.
You're just excited, dude.
If anybody go to the Road Trip Angler YouTube and look up the Florida episode Catching the Snook, and it's like, boom, I got one, and then the best thing ever, looky, we got Snooky. I was like, that's the way to go.
I just wish the other video existed, but we'll talk about that later.
Oh, yeah.
The off-camera stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, the off-camera
stuff. I don't know nothing about that.
I don't know. I know nothing.
You know, we could put him back in the hot seat and grill him for a little bit. So this tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is our redfish panel. So we're going to be talking a little bit about redfishing tonight, kind of get into the ins and outs and the different things about a little bit of redfishing, talk about some of the tournaments, some of the differences. So kind of going to kick it off with you, Mr. Dustin. You're kind of like the local hero in your area. So
I don't know.
Let's talk about redfishing. How does somebody get in? How does somebody get into this? As a proper bassing guy, you know, I want to come down, catch redfish, or I've got interest in it, man. Where do you start? How do you get into it?
And I just happen to be in a prime area. You know, the Texas coast is just our same with Louisiana. You know, just the estuaries and everything just set up right for it. We got everything from marsh and backwaters to endless grass flats, the Laguna Madre. It just sets up perfect for those fish to thrive and just have fun with them, man. It's just it's pretty cool stalking them out there. There's a lot you could do on the water to find the fish in the areas that they are in. You know, go to any place where the bay meets some drains, river estuaries or creeks or anything there. They thrive in the brackish water. So, you know, it's cool to go find your areas. You know, Google Maps your friends. Jump on there and look for stuff. And roadside launches, the combat launches are always fun, trekking through the mud and everything. But, you know, we don't have to, you know, we're fortunate over here. We don't have to deal with those big tide swings like Jesse and them do over there, you know, St. Augustine and North. Mm-hmm. They deal with some 6 to 9 foot tide swings, which can wreak havoc on combat launch sites. You know, with the mud over there is a lot more, they call it pluff mud for a reason, because you sink to your waist in it like pretty quick. But I mean, a lot of people over here get started, you know, wade fishing, walking into spots, fishing off up your bulkheads, bridges, and different things. And then, you know, just like myself, I would walk in and wade before surfing sometimes, and I'd go through top waters early in the morning. And then I was like, saw people on kayaks. I was like, man, I got to get in one of those. It's gonna branch me out a lot more. And then it led me down that wormhole real quick.
I don't. Hey, Jesse. So like, getting to hear a little bit of Dustin's backstory. Let's hear a little bit about your backstory, dude. Like, how did you get into all this?
Kayak fishing?
Yeah.
Oh man,
let's hear it.
It's a pretty crazy story. I mean, I was literally just, you know, one Saturday you're watching. I don't like fishing as much on Saturdays as much as, unless I'm, you know, fishing a tournament. So you know, sitting there watching fishing shows as everybody does, and I saw a kayak fishing show with Jim Salmons, and that was, I say, 2014, 2015, right around there. And watching him catch fish out of a kayak, I was like, man, I've always been a kind of a fisherman my whole life, growing up in South Florida and, you know, fishing with my old man, either going to the Glades or going to the Keys or out in Biscayne Bay and fishing for the big snooks under the bridges and stuff like that, you know, whichever it was, you know. Catching that show really got me hooked. That was it. To be able to kind of get back in those little areas, in these little creeks that almost, you know, boats can't go. I mean, yeah, a little micro skiff, you might be able to push pole, but it's different, you know, being able to be mobile, can throw it right in the back of a truck, go real quick, you know, go out for a couple of, you know, hours in the morning or in the evening. Being self-employed, you know, it's pretty crucial for stuff like that. So yeah, no, just a kayak fishing show got me hooked for sure.
There you go. How about you, Halfcent? You come from a fishing family, bunch of fishing fools around your neck of the woods. So what kind of got you started, and like, how have you decided to kind of keep pursuing it just a little bit here?
Yeah, you know, so I'd like to say that I started about 10 years ago is kind of how it all began. My dad was still in the Navy, and when he moved out to L.A. in California, he was out there. And, well, we had a bass boat, and let's just say the garage sizes and parking in L.A. for a 24-foot bass boat wasn't going to work. So hopped on the old boob tube, kind of like how Jesse did, and saw not Jim's show, but actually Chad Hooper's show, and hopped on Craigslist, got ourselves a couple Malibu kayaks, and launched out of the bays in L.A., and then it really kind of took off from there. Dad got his first Jackson up at Lodi, back when Headwaters, Headwater Kayak was up there. Got his first Jackson there, and I proudly say I've never been in a different boat than a Jackson kayak since I started doing this, except for that Craigslist boat. And ever since then, I've noticed I've caught way more fish and have been able to get in places where I couldn't in the bass boat. And I've just fell in love with it ever since. And I mean, I'm going 10 years strong now, and I've been sticking with the Jackson family for, I'd say, yeah, half my life now, given the fact I'm 21. So yeah, 10 years, almost half my life. And, yeah, there's really no looking back. I do enjoy fishing out of the bass boat still, but nothing really beats being in the kayak.
Yeah, we're not going to see you in any of the Bassmaster Opens coming up real soon on the big boat side.
Man, I've really thought about it, but the only problem is that there's regulations. And regulations say I can't have a 300 horsepower Mercury on the back of my boat, so I'm not going to get a new one.
There you go. So, talking about the different areas, I mean, obviously, Jacob, you're around Houston area, Dustin, Victoria, and then Jesse, you're on the Florida coast. What is like when you get into some of the differences in approaching these fish? You know, I know Dustin, you're in the marshes a lot. What's it look like for you, Jesse, as far as your area and different things?
So, yeah, we've got marshes, but it's a little different, and it's kind of something I didn't really notice until we went to Steinahatchee for a Florida Redfish Series round. All of their marshes, like Dustin's was saying, they just kind of run out of a mouth into the Gulf. So on a low tide, you're pretty much in the ocean. Whereas here, our marshes and stuff, they don't get down as much. I can still kind of get in some back areas around where I live, but everything kind of flows out into the intercoastal. So there's still water, you know, kind of anywhere. So that was something getting used to. I got up into a creek on the west coast, and the tide went out, and boy, I'm trying to push and pull that blue sky through about 3 inches of water, and yeah, that wasn't too fun for a while there. But now over by me, a lot of oyster beds, like this previous tournament I just fished last weekend, started off on a low tide and was actually able to see all these oyster beds all over. I mean, we're talking, you know, 4 to 5 feet, you know, like Dustin was saying, they were clearly out of the water. And I just literally watched them the whole day until, as I'm heading back, that whole bay that you could see all these moisture, there are all the oyster beds, it was literally water. And I could just pedal right across through it without having to worry about anything. It's actually when I caught my last red at the end of the day with 10 minutes that got me in the top 10 right there in that particular area. So
just kind of backing up a little bit, and any of y'all can answer this one. Like, how do you target reds? Like, what are we looking for? I know, you know, bass, we're looking for channel swings and points and timber and hard bottom and all those different things. But like, if somebody wants to target redfish, what are they looking for?
It depends on what kind of water you're in. Say like on the grass flats in the Laguna Madre, you're looking for potholes, depth changes, different things like that. Bait fish present as well. They're big. They like to run around and chase bait all the time. So, you know, you're constantly targeting the sandy areas on the flats where there's something where they can hide in ambush, or they're roaming and prowling in schools and they're chasing down bait fish. Same thing in the marsh. You're looking for, they like structure like shell pads, you know, in like a foot and a half of water. And during low tide, even in the marsh here, we can still get back in there, and you'll have them crawling on their belly in the mud in like 6 inches of water. You'll see their backs out of the water with their eyes sometimes. I've thrown top water to them and made them eat right in front of their face. Just, you know, it gets fun when they start belly crawling. We have a lot of opportunities like that in the back lakes and the back marsh here as well. And then, like I said, the grass flats is fun. You're looking for potholes, looking for changes in depth along, you know, channels and crash, you know, just canals and different things. You can go target them at night on structure, on docks, in neighborhoods and different things. I know Jake and them did that in one of the road trip angler shows in Freeport. Good times doing that as well. The main thing here is, you know, you got shallow water, you got grass, you know, Spartina grass, you got shrimp, bait fish, and then redfish, you know, if you notice, they have their mouth positioned on the bottom, you know, so they like to feed with their nose in the ground and rooting in the mud, pushing up crustaceans and different things, and they push all that bait to the surface, and the next thing you know, you got a pod of redfish working, you got birds hovering over them, and they're diving down trying to eat the shrimp that are pushed up to the surface. That's a dead giveaway in the marsh, is that right there. Or the birds running down the bank, the little white snowy egrets. They'll be chasing, the schools will be pushing down the bank up in the grass in like 6 to 12 inches of water, and the shrimp will be going all crazy because they're up there hiding in the grass, but the redfish got a high enough tide to get up in there. And then the birds are chasing and playing hopscotch down the bank, and you're like, I see them across the lake, and I'm like, oh, there's a school over there, and I'll go beeline and cut them off at the pass, throw into them, try to pick a fish off the outside or the back edge, and then I can catch back up to them and catch more fish out of that school. It's pretty neat.
Right on.
Yeah.
And as far as seasonality goes, you know, like up here in Indiana, obviously we've got winter. Is there any point in time where these fish are pushing out of the shallows, running out deep, and hanging out for any long, extended periods of time? How's that look?
Winter time.
Yep. Major water, cold water. Snaps. Water drops below, you know, 55-ish. They'll move into the deeper channel swings and different things. That's when crankbaits come into play. Slow rolling like a Z-Man bullseye, a little spinner bait with a little paddle tail on it. Different things like that. The days warm up, they're more prone to come and move up. Say if you had a little lower water and the sun warmed up some flat that was exposed, and then the water came in and pushed back over that flat, that that absorbed heat in that darker bottom, that water will warm up coming back on that flat, and those reds, that bait will come up there, and those reds will follow that bait up there. Then if you got a little sunshine day, they'll come up in sun and everything. Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah, that mud, the mud and the oysters, as soon as that goes down, sun heats it up, comes back up. Like Dustin said, they're on top of it. It's firing off. But yeah, the wintertime was trickier, especially coming up here, learning this area, because of the tidal shifts. You know, when I was down towards Cocoa and Palm Bay, I'm in Palm Coast now, but Palm Bay, there was really no tidal swings. So you just kind of went to deeper holes and stuff like that and waited for the day to warm up to for them to push up. So it was pretty neat learning all this stuff, you know, trying to figure out, oh, the mud, you know, the mud and the rocks, they heat up faster. So you're going to want to go to those kind of places in the wintertime when the tides do come up. So it's pretty cool.
And, you know, let's talk about the weather just a little bit. Dustin kind of punched on that. When you guys are out in these marshes in different places, I always imagine it, especially, you know, when you see the stuff around PAC, Louisiana, the different areas like that, you imagine it's way out there. Like, you're out there in a kayak. You might have a motor, Torquedo, or you might be using human power. Dude, the weather can change in a drop of a hat out there. So, especially Florida. Florida's terrible. I mean, it rains daily, it seems like, out in Florida somewhere. But how do you move your time, and how do you kind of watch these things when you're out there in these flats? Bray?
Oh, man. I tell you what, I like that My Radar app. You know, if I'll watch the, you know, look at the weather and see the percentage of the rain before I go out. And if it's that 40-ish and beyond, it's kind of like, all right, you start getting, you know, from 10, I always say in Florida, you about 11 or so, you better start pulling up that radar because something's popping up off the coast.
Yep.
Especially in the summertime. Pop-up
storm. I mean, same here in Texas. Oh, yeah. So. Good weather, good trusty weather app. And then your NOAA, tidal stations with the predictions, even though wind can affect tide at times, it's still good to have a good baseline of what your tides are doing throughout the day as well, especially if you're in, you know, when you got big tide swings coming up or something like that. But yeah, it can change in the drop of a hat over here. Same, you know, you cross a big bay over here, you know, 3 or 4 miles across, and then you have a, you know, light winds in the morning, all of a sudden you got a frontal passage pushed through and you're on the south side of that bay system and you got a 30-mile north wind and you're fighting 4-foot waves the whole way back, you know, five, you know, it can get pretty nasty out there in some of these bays. They have some deeper water out in the middle, you know, 5, 6, 7 foot. It's pretty nasty. Just like fishing a big body of water, you know, right. A big lake, big reservoir.
I was like today, I was going to go out fishing today with the kids because they're on spring break. It was a perfect day, but I was like, oh man, we wanted to kind of go do some more stuff. So I was like, well, let's plan it tomorrow. And then I come to find out, you know, it's going to be about 80 today. Now tomorrow it's going to be about 62. And it's like, really? And it's going to be windy all day.
I hate that
day.
For you so down there in Florida.
Today it was nice and warm. And it was like, oh, it's a perfect day. And it's like, oh, you plan a day and it's going to be windy and 62 or so, you know, 40s in the morning. It's like, so frustrating sometimes.
But like you said, you mentioned pack, you know, you have a lot of same over here too in the marsh. You got areas where you have little barrier islands that are all across the marsh that you can, like, I got spots I can go and run and get behind islands and get out of the wind and then run across and get behind some islands and get on the, you know, leeward side of things and get across, you know, marsh is really easy. A marsh, you're going to not be as prone to like the wind and the waves as much. But still, you're prone to the thunderstorms and the flash booms. You know, I don't like that old lightning thing.
Oh man, I hate it. Last year I got in one and had to get up in the brushes because we couldn't make it back. We couldn't make it back, and we got in this, and I got down Indian style. I just bent down and I just put my head down and I was like, please don't hit me.
They're thinking about them power poles up there waving in the wind.
They were out there and I was like, oh, hit the boat. Don't hit me. I'll tell you
some gnarly stuff was Grand Isle. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. I had went to fish the Ride the Bull event, and it was myself and Jeff Little got there that Thursday, and we fished that evening. And then all of a sudden they said, oh no, this hurricane's coming straight to y'all. So that hurricane was coming to us. They get put an evacuation order by 9 a.m. the next morning. We were on the water at freaking 5 in the afternoon. And we had a squall line come through. And I'm telling you, I had the big rig going up over waves, and it was just like this. And then back down the other side. I'm telling you, it was gnarly. And on the way back, it started lightning like crazy. And Jeff Little, he was behind me, and I was already taking off. And I was getting it across the channel to get back to the marina. And then all of a sudden, one just hit like, poof. I mean, I felt my hair stand up on my arms and everything. I ducked into a cove and ran and just beached the kayak as fast as I could and ran underneath an embankment on like a bluff wall and just crouched down. And then here comes Jeff coming by me. Do. I was like, oh, I'm waiting. I'll be there in a minute. Like, no way.
There is some guys that does not bother. I'm like, you did it. Freaks me out. I don't know what it is, but it just, I don't like it.
Yeah, that was
do good not one. Like it at all.
It was super loud.
So you kind of started talking about, you know, what the reds are feeding on and the different things, but as a bass guy that carries more tackle than they need to sometimes, I want to ask you guys, and everybody can answer, what's your tackle crate look like for redfish opposed to bass fishing? I mean, what are you guys packing? How many rods you got? What
very kind of similar are they? Very similar. I'll start that one off. Redfish are very similar to bass. I mean, their tendencies are they'll eat topwaters. You can throw, especially a weedless presentation in the marsh when the tide's higher and they're crawling, they'll eat the popping frogs all day. Paddle tails, underspins, chatter baits on the flats, gold, you know, spoons. I have top waters. I have a couple different paddle tails and jerk baits and different things. And they like the little small glide baits. They like the glide baits pretty good. I mean, I'll have a couple boxes with some wake baits, crank baits if I'm fishing some deeper structure in some channels and different things, fishing around piers or rocks or jetties. I'll have rattle traps, crank baits, you know, different things like that. I'll have a rod. I'll have a popping cork with a shrimp imitation with a small short leader. I have a top water, have a wake bait, have a paddle tail, have a weedless shrimp imitation, and then like something else, you know. It all depends on what they want. Some days you got to grind it out, snatch a popping cork all day, and other days you fish your moving baits and they're just hitting everything you throw at them, you know. They can be stupid.
I do know
sometimes.
About the popping cork. I do know about the old poppy cork.
Mm-hmm. The bass will eat the crap out of that thing too.
That's about my extent of it. I know about the popping cork. I know redfish look cool.
Yeah. Well, how many rods you take, Jesse?
I was going to say, I would say it. I mean, Dustin carries like a shit ton of tackle wherever he's going, so it doesn't really matter. But
I'm gonna have
everything. I'd say like maybe 2 to 3 boxes of stuff, like paddle tails, jig heads, popcorn stuff, and some chatterbaits. I'd probably take out 3 rods, 1 spinning rod and 2 bait casters, just because the variety compared to what we usually do for like regular bass fishing or tournament fishing.
Oh yeah.
It's, you have like 9 rods compared to like maybe 3 or 4 with a couple of boxes instead of a whole, you know, black pack in the back with a bunch of other crap you won't touch, but it's there anyways.
Yeah. You always make sure you got a couple, you know, a good extra set of jig heads in the open, like screw lock, and then also weedless. And you always got to have some top waters, a couple wake baits, a spoon or two if you're fishing grass flats, and some top waters and popping cork and leader material. Lots of paddle tails. They'll hit crank baits. They'll hit frogs. They'll hit, man, they, like I said, they don't get picky sometimes. I've caught one on a freaking marshmallow, and I really want to run a wire and twist tie through a jalapeno and put a treble hook and catch one on a jalapeno too one day. I'm gonna get that on video.
Honestly,
that'd be nice. I'm gonna do that.
Sounds like a good Instagram reel, honestly.
It sure does. I think we're gonna have to do that. I'm gonna...
That's like a million viewer.
Yeah, that's a good one right there. I'm gonna do that next time I'm on some schools. I'm gonna have one ready to go. Talk me into it. Little Miss Jean said a popping cork is finally known as a tourist rig. Single penny. Oh, big pennies on here saying two or three rods. Yeah, and then 5 to 6 is better. Yeah, I like to have all my five. Tyler Bean, what's up? I'm looking at the comments.
I got five. I'm working on the comments.
Jesse, jump in there. What's in your crate? Better yet, what's in your Orion cooler that sits behind your seat?
Oh, that's a secret.
There's a little village in here.
Well, it all depends. Like tournament day, I do have a J crate still. I got a couple J crates, but I carry about 5 rods. I'll have that top water for in the morning. I'm a really heavy paddle tail thrower. My buddies from Skinny Water Lures, they got a 4-inch, they got a 3-inch, and then they got a 2.5. And I've been throwing this green goblin color. It's like a green and gold. And God, it's been just doing really good for me. So I'll rig those up, whether it be like a 3/16 or an 1/8 ounce, depending, you know, like that 1 foot or so, that 1/8 ounce is pretty good. But the 3/16 is pretty much my go to, unless we're in some crazy tide stuff like the, you know, that Jacksonville round. There were some, when I was trying to pre-fish, there was some there's some moving waters up that way where you got to almost get on that 1/4 ounce just to kind of get it down and keep it from just skipping on top of those big shifts. I'm pretty big on the paddle tails, and some jerk shads as well, but I've been just this recently, like this year, I've been just kind of really just that power fishing, just kind of grid fishing, pull up the power pole, go to the next kind of spot, you know, as you just kind of see stuff. And the paddle tails is my big thing right now. So love them for skipping up under docks, skipping them, you know, in the mangroves or up under these oak trees. I got this place over here, it's called Bing's Landing. We get in the back and there's this beautiful golf course back there in the marsh. So you got the marsh flats and you got the golf course. It's really pristine looking. And there's some really low lying oak trees, and the snook love hiding up under there in the bends as you come around. And you flip up under these trees and yank some big snook or reds, you know, that are kind of hiding up under there. So, that paddle tail does the trick, whether you just open face jig head or Texas, you know, I like that Texas rig or the owner twist lock, you know, for. Mm-hmm. For going around those oyster beds, you know, and the Texas rig for that keeps everything weedless and kind of get around those oyster beds.
Yep, the wake bait over the top works really great because you're staying.
You kind of turned me on to the wake bait thing. Yeah. I really didn't think, you know, like wake bait.
Yeah, and then I'm not gonna give away everything on that because I fish it a lot different than some people might. So,
that's actually my next question, dude. Like, so Jesse's kind of divulged his strength bait. You guys, the other two, have you got a strength bait? A preferred technique. Let's call it that. Preferred technique. Dustin's like, you son of a gun. Why'd you ask?
Yeah. Well, there's different things. Like if I'm out power fishing and like covering water and scouting, I'm throwing a wake bait because I can cover a buttload of water with that thing. Now, if I'm out just push poling around and sight casting fish and seeing them, looking for bait activity where, you know, you see the redfish pushing. I mean, it's obvious when you're in the marsh or back tidal creeks or anything, you hear a red like blow up on some baits. It sounds like a damn toilet flush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now if I'm looking around for that, I'm going to have something a little more subtle. If they're in skinnier water, I'm going to have a little small shrimp imitation on a weedless hook. So I can just ease it up and like underhand pitch to them and watch them eat it right there in front of them. I mean, there's times where you're just cruising in your kayak and all of a sudden you look down, oh, there's a redfish beside you. And you basically drop your rod tip in the water right beside him and he hits it right off the end of your rod. Bam, right there. I mean, when you're sight casting, you're going to have something, you know, a little skinnier stuff. You'll have something a little more subtle. But like if I'm out just beating it, I'm throwing a wake bait like crazy, dude. You get reaction strikes
on that playa color, dude. It's because you're rocking that plaid color. They don't even know you're there. You just
they think
like
I'm the clouds in disguise. Yes,
think the you're sand. The clouds. They're like, gee, that cloud just dropped me a shrimp.
Yep, shrimp fell out the sky. How that shrimp hurt.
How many times, Dustin, have you like had a bite as some birds fly by and you kind of just pitch something over towards it? Like you see some schools and then you see them birds flying over, kind of throw one over as they fly by and they immediately hit it because they think something dropped as they flew by. I can't count the times I've had that kind of happen just kind of on a bird, you know, one of those bird days where you're going to see a lot of action like that. That's really cool.
Yeah, it gets fun when they're all grouped up. There's some schools, like right now, they're little smaller pods, but man, in the fall here, it just gets stupid sometimes. I mean, it gets outrageous.
Now, I kind of want to do something else too. I want to, while we're talking about tackle and different things like that, I want to talk about like reels. Reels is a pretty big thing with saltwater because you really probably shouldn't just go buy anything off the shelf and take it out to the salt. It's going to be a little bit hard on it. So let's hear a little bit about what kind of reel setups that you guys are using. Maybe a spinner reel setup and then a bait cast setup.
Hey, Jake.
What's up, Jake?
Hey, you awake, Jake?
Man, so, oh yeah, I'm here. Don't worry. Man, what I'd say is like I use a lot of the Daiwa reels, and I've had really good luck with those, especially in the salt. And the baitcaster I like to use the most is the Zillion. That one, because I can cast that thing far, like whatever I'm using, I just cast it real far. And then a Tatula spinning reel is what I'm using for that popping part. But I will rarely pick up that spinning rod, so I'm mainly just using either a that Zillion SVT or one of the Tatula reels. And I honestly just soak those things in some fresh water for about 30 seconds and take them out when I'm finished up. And then those things are good as new. But that's really what I'm using.
You're talking on your spinning setup, are you talking about a 1,000, a 2,000, or a 3,000 size spool?
I do. So I use a little bit of a smaller one, so I'm only using the 1,000 is what I'm using.
Yeah.
Dance?
Go ahead, Jesse.
Anybody else?
All right. Well, I mean, I'm a big Shimano guy, so I love my Stratix. I have an older FK, I have an FL, and I just got, actually, 2 weekends ago, just got the FM and pair them all with the Shimano's as well. From the Terramar to the PX Terramar to the XX Terramar, which is that's more of a pretty much of a high end kind of rod. That's kind of my go to. I like the I've got a 2500. I got a couple 2500 just because the gear ratio is a little bit more. It's a 6.0 or a little less. Sorry, and then I've got the FKs and the FM Stratix that have the 6.4 ratio. So. I'm big on the Shimano guy on the Shimano reels and rods.
Same Shimano. I run Vanford spinning reels. Normally, if I'm throwing a reel, it's for the pop and cork. You get some distance out of it. You don't got to worry about backlash, all that good stuff. But got your reels tuned. It's all good anyway. Top waters, wake baits, paddle tails. If it's windy, I'll throw them, or if I'm throwing a little lightweight, like a smaller presentation, like a Ned shrimp or something like that, I'm going to throw it on a spinning reel as well. But yeah, I depend on those Shimano's. The Tranks 150 is a workhorse for me. The little SLX 70s are really good. They sling the lighter wake baits real well in the smaller top waters. Yeah, that's about it.
I like that Vanford too. It's so light. Vanford, I think it's 6.2 ounces, 6.2 or 6.4 ounces for a spinning reel. That's pretty dang. It's got 20 pounds of drag, so having something that light with that much drag.
Yeah, you can get them in. It's good to have the backbone and everything and the good rod as well. In the summertime, when it's hot and everything, you don't want to fish with super light tackle and take forever to land those fish where they expend all their energy and they get stressed and everything. I want to get them to the net as quick as I can especially if I'm in a tournament, and get them in the live well, get them some aeration going, get them some O2 going, and some G juice or rejuvenate in there, and have a couple frozen water bottles in that live well to keep them lively, keep that water temp down, get them revived. That way you're not stressing the fish out and everything. You don't lose your fish on the way to weigh in. It's always a big plus. Old Phil Spencer said something about a wake bait. Well, sometimes they don't want a topwater feel. He said, I know I can make that dang topwater dance myself, man. And it's just, we'll have to go out and check it out one day. Sometimes they're short striking that topwater. I put that wake bait on to burn it, and they just go stupid on it. So there's some tricks to that one. It's not just a reel and see retrieve. You can do all kind of things with that wake bait as well. It's pretty dang cool, you know, to make them react like that. Because I can make them eat that thing by reaction a lot of times when they're not touching anything else. It's pretty cool.
What did Rudy just say?
Hold on. We got an audience question. Wait a minute. Got an audience question. So Vicky's wanting to know how much red typically weighs. I mean, what's your average, everyday, run-of-the-mill redfish? What's a big one?
5-6 pounds over here. Average slot is 20 inches to 28 inches over here in Texas. You keep three of them. A solid redfish, you know, 26 to 28 inches, 8.5 pounds. You see some 9, you see some 10 sometimes. Just depends on where they're at, how much bait's in the area and everything like that. You know, you got some of them marsh fish that they'll push 10 pounds at 27.5, 27.75. They can grow pretty good.
Yeah, they're 18 to 27 here on the limit. So
there you go. What's a big one look like? What's like?
Oh, they grow large.
Anything in the 30s and 40s. That's a big one.
Yeah, you start pushing 50. That's a monster.
That's a giant.
I can take you to a river in Gulf Shores, Alabama, and put you on some 40-inch plus fish in there, no problem, on a crankbait. Always fun.
Now we got another question. I'm assuming this is a family member trying to get
that's
details.
That's my little brother. Yeah,
that's your little brother. Yeah. All right. So, yeah. Were you catching these monster trout out, Dustin? They're absolutely beautiful.
Donkey Bay swim baits. I have his shirt on right here. Yep, he's out of Louisiana. It's a saltwater glide bait. It's definitely technique specific. It's pretty cool, especially when you can watch them eat on forward-facing sonar. There's some neat tricks to some stuff to be had with that in the saltwater. I'm not giving away too much of that one because it's pretty neat. And then the Coastal Marsh is a bait company over here. They do custom corkies and soft dines. It's the Paul Brown lures, a spin and twitch bait, soft-bodied around a cork insert with a rattle. It just perfectly mimics like a wounded mullet in the water, and you know the big trout love mullet in the wintertime. They'd rather expend their energy on some big profile than some little stuff. You know, elephants do eat peanuts, but in the winter I found a bigger profile bait works a lot better for me and what I like to do and where I like to target those big trout. Thanks a lot, man. I enjoy catching those. That's one of my passions, is chasing those big specks, man.
Yeah. Best golden spoon from Dustin Dunham.
You throw them, Jesse? I throw them a lot over here.
I don't. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I throw them a few times, but not really.
There's a – man, you can't beat a Johnson Sprite. Fish Lab makes a pretty good one. They make a black one. And believe it or not, I throw a black spoon a lot in clear water. And
clear
especially
water,
in cloudy days. Yep.
Okay. Ooh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Hmm. And there's you can use epoxy and add a little – 2 and 3 4-millimeter glass rattles underneath the hook. You can add a rattle to them and add a little tone to them. You can modify your spoons. It's pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Bagley's makes the hex spoons too. Those are pretty cool. They got bronze, they got copper, gold, and silver. Yeah. I like to throw the quarter ounce, not the half ounce. I like those smaller ones, especially where you can tick it over the grass on the sand pockets. They just absolutely kill it. Jake froze. There he goes.
There he goes.
He's back. Yeah. You're welcome, Justin.
No, great questions from the audience, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Keep those things coming. It's awesome. When these guys get to see your interaction, let you know the you know, you guys are engaged and listening, so we definitely appreciate that.
Huge, yeah.
Here on Doc Talk. So yeah, talking about the reels, we talked about everything. The kayak setup. We've kind of talked about the kayaks that you guys have. What are you doing after you fish? Like, what's that process look like of getting these things cleaned back up, getting gear stowed away, making sure, number one, you ain't rusted, number two, you ain't got a bunch of salt crammed up in your Torquedo or Flex Drive or whatever you got going on?
Yeah, I rinse my stuff down after every trip, man. I mean, there might be a day I'm scrambling and got to get to work or something, but I still try to run through the, you know, throw a dollar in the car wash and just spray the kayak down, spray the Torquedo off. I got, you know, real clean and real magic, freaking wash my reels down, all that good stuff, wipe everything down. Any hook, any lures that I've had, like, strode all over the deck of the kayak, I always rinse them off and hang them up. I got some racks in the garage, I hang them on, and then they're just ready to go the next time because they stay in rotation anyways. So yeah, and just rinse the car a little bit here and there, depending on if I was, you know, launching close to the water, might have got a little bit of, you know, water on the vehicle or something, not, you know, something like that. Still getting used to dragging a trailer as much as I am now, so having to wash it off as well, keep it like goo.
Yeah, that's a big change up for you going from the truck bed to the trailer.
Oh yeah,
you started wet launching any yet?
No, not really. I will, but not right. I haven't had to lately. I still caught it down. I like, because I spend time and rig my boat up, you know, right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got it down to under 15 minutes. I have my motor and my batteries, all my stuff ready, and then launched in 15 minutes. So it's all good.
Heck yeah. How about you, Jesse? What are you doing after you get off the water of your boat?
Well, most of the time around here, luckily, I'm right by this car wash. So I do the same. I just pull up in there, and I got that Yakima trailer as well. So hose everything down. When I get home, I'm actually a little finicky on my rods and reels. Well, not really my rods as much, but I'll get home and I'll hose my rods down. But I actually I got a squirt bottle that I actually have for misting and just mist. And what I'll do is I'll take my reels and I'll just spritz them, spray them down, and then wipe them off like that. So I'm not really taking any fresh water and forcing that salt water into the reel, you know, so all that stuff that might have splashed in, as long as I'm not dunking anything in the water on accident, I like to just take that really and just kind of do a light spray, kind of soak it down, and then microfiber cloth, and then some reel cleaner after, and just wipe it down. So like I said, so I'm not really power washing any of that salt water into the reel. So
I've never tried that. I wonder if I catch more fish. That'd be a holy water.
Maybe. You might take her aim's advice.
Oh, yeah. Vicky had a question there.
Yeah. Let's throw up Vicky's question here. So, when you're doing tournaments, you take them to weigh in. How's a redfish tournament vary from a bass tournament?
There is some that are CPR, like the one I'll be going to Florida with, that Jesse, the Florida Redfish Series, they're doing CPR via Fishing Chaos. But the majority of our fishing tournaments over here are live weigh-in. So I have a live well on my kayak. I keep them, I fish care and everything like that. And it's the benefit of you to take live fish to the weigh-in and then get released afterward. Because if you have a dead fish, the normal tournaments over here are a half pound deduction per dead fish. So you lose a pound, and that's, you're going down the leaderboard if you, yeah. It costs you some money for sure.
And that's where the Take Two and the U-Pick have come in huge for you as far as carrying those loads.
Yep, for sure. The Take Two especially, I have so much room. I run the live well in front of me where I can actually tend to the fish, keep them upright, you know, add the water bottles, turn the OTO up, add a little, you know, more G juice in there if they need it, just tend to them and take care of them, you know, works out pretty good.
Yeah, for sure. How about you, Jesse?
Yeah, Jake. Jake, go ahead.
Oh, I mean, kind of Dustin covered it pretty much. I mean, I haven't fished many, as in I haven't fished any of the redfish tournaments, but Dad has. But, I mean, yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, here, you know, off the Texas coast, it's, you know, the live weigh-ins. I haven't seen any with CPR yet. But yeah, it's all live weigh-ins and just keeping your fish, you know, healthy and alive, so you don't lose that weight at the end of the day. Because like Dustin said, you know, you're losing a pound, you're getting knocked down pretty quick. I've been to a couple of the weigh-ins and seen how the process is going, and it's mind-blowing, because it's really kind of like watching, you know, the big boat side of Bassmaster stuff. It's that live weigh-in kind of thing, and there you don't get any deductions for a dead fish, but you know, for reds, it's pretty substantial when you get to the end of it all. But yeah, instead of CPR, it's just live weigh-in kind of stuff, and keeping your tank either in your kayak or you're using a stringer on the side of the boat, you know, keeping those fish alive the best.
That's
you can.
Tough though, when you're running a motor and you try to drag them over 2 miles an hour, you drown them. And in the summertime, they're super fatigued, yeah, and it's hot, yeah, and you got to try to keep them oxygenated, and it's tough to do in that shallow water when it's 90 degrees, yeah, outside. Makes it tough. And I would like to see some more events over here go CPR, but then there is one thing that it's a little tidbit to me, is that, you know, weight really tells you who had the best two fish by weight. By length, I mean, you can have a 24-inch fish, and they both be 7 pounds, and you can have somebody that has a 26 that only weighs 5.5. They're super skinny. You know, there's some difference in, yeah, in their genetics, or, you know, build or something, you know.
Right.
They can all be different. So, but it is nice to not have to worry about the, you know, keeping them alive and tending to them, but that's all part of it in a live weigh-in tournament. But, you know, it'd be nice to have some more CPR events over here. Like mine, I run one. It's CPR. So I'll get it. I know Jesse, most of the Florida events are CPR.
Yeah,
they are. Yeah, the Redfish series is six rounds, all catch, photo, release. We got some local ones that are catch, photo, release as well. It's crazy. April is going to be like a tournament, like every week for me, whether it be the that next round Florida Redfish series. And we've got three local ones literally every Saturday, the whole week of April. So I think one of them is going to be catch, photo, release, and I think we're going to have two live ones, bringing back in weigh-ins, which actually got with Dustin, kind of helped me out last year, kind of figuring out, putting together a live well and stuff, trying to figure that out, and it worked. I had two fish that I brought back to the weigh-in that were, I mean, when I pulled them out of that box, I mean, they were thrashing. I mean, so it seemed to work. So yeah, it seems to be, you know, the good thing about the weigh-in ones here, especially like the bigger ones, we've got a organization called CCA, Coastal Conservation Association. They'll be at these events with these big oxygenated tanks, and they'll actually take those fish, they'll put them in the tanks, rejuvenate them, and then they'll turn them loose right there at the bay that we're at, you know, where the weigh-in's at. So it's really cool. You know, the kill ratio on them on those kind of events are really, really, really low. They're tough. They're tough, yeah, fish too. You know,
there's a lot more hardy than the trout are, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
It's awesome. Are you guys packing any ice out there with you when you do bring the fish in? I mean,
oh yeah,
like a bass dude.
I have about 10 frozen water bottles in a little Yeti cooler, soft cooler, behind me, and I'll put one of them in there every now and then. And I still got a cooler in the truck or the car with a 10-pound bag of ice. As soon as I get back to that launch, I'm throwing that 10-pound bag of ice on them fish. And it's going to slow down their metabolism, make them chill out, not be stressed. By the time, like I said, by the time you get back, I've done a 2.5-3 hour trip to weigh in, and I can't get a hold of them. They're so freaking crazy, going so crazy in there, you know, from the oxygen and the cool water and everything.
So, yeah, and that G-juice is legit.
Oh, dude, yeah. It replenishes their slime layer, gets rid of the ammonia, just helps with all that dissolved oxygen mess and all that, whatever, all it does. It freaking works awesome.
if you want some G-juice, TH Marine carries that. Some of the best stuff out there, honestly, for fish gear.
Let's go.
So let's see, what else can we cover here, gentlemen? Y'all got any questions for each other in this last 10 minutes of the podcast?
Dustin, where are we going when we get there?
Where are we going? I'll bring it to you. Dustin, you bringing some of them Wagyu steak?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Now, we're actually
chopping block in the house, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, John, I'm sure John will hook us up with some boudin and some good stuff.
Okay. Yeah, we got a place to stay together as well, so we're gonna be crashing together.
And, yeah, we got us an Airbnb there in Panacea. I scoped out like 7 different launch points, man.
Yeah.
I got some stuff. What's that? Who?
Y'all doing some Big Spoon Little Spoon action?
No.
Sir.
Yep, Dustin, what's in the cooler? Yep.
Oh, hello.
I really want to know, Jesse, what is in your Orion cooler that you carry around in the back of your boat?
Okay, sometimes it's just some water. Sometimes it's literally like only about 2 or 3 or maybe, you know, just a handful of water, because I don't want it to get too weighed down. Because most of the time, that thing is a standing platform for me. I'll anchor it down, and then I stand on it and sight cast when I have the power pole down. And, you know, it's kind of like being on a skiff on a standing platform there. So it's really cool. But, you know, I've got the blue 35 that I actually won at ICAST. That sits in the truck. That's got all the
corona. That's got all the fun trick, the adult fun stuff.
Yes, sir.
There you go. So, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, fellas, as we close this thing out, as we do on the Jackson Kayak Dock Talk podcast, I want to go around the panel. Kind of let you know, tell folks at home where to find you on social media, and thank any sponsors, anybody that you need to thank out there in the world of the socials tonight. We'll start with a little Half Cent down there in the corner.
Yeah.
And little Half Cent. well, yeah, you can find me on Instagram and Facebook. Facebook's just, you know, Jacob Penny. Instagram is going to be jacob.jd.penny. Made that complicated. But mainly just want to thank Jackson, of course. You know, been a big component of a lot of my kayak fishing career. That's the main one. Dakota Lithium, Rain Shutter Rods, and now Bates Fishing Co. Just want to thank all those guys and Newport Vessels. But I want to thank you guys as well, Dustin, Jesse, and Chad. I mean, you know, Jesse, I got to meet you last year at ICAST for the first time, and we got to do some lazy river action, and you know, that was entertaining. But Dustin, I want to thank you, because I mean, man, I get a lot of my info from red fishing, kind of the tips and tricks and whatnot from you, and you know, I'm still relatively new to the whole red fishing thing, but you know, definitely want to give a big shout out, and then
Yep. How about you, Mr. Jesse?
Oh man. Well, I mean, Facebook, you can find me Jesse Laspier. Instagram, Fish On Kayak Anglers. Like to thank you guys, I mean, for having me on here. You know, thank Jackson Kayak and Blue Sky Boatworks and Orion Coolers, you know, just the whole company. Especially, you know, thank Dustin to help me get on the team and, you know, have faith in me to give me a shot. So, you know, thankful for that. Skinny Water Lures. They're a local company here, in Palm Coast. A couple of my buddies, they're veteran and, first responders, here in Flagler County. And started up this lure company in 2020, and gave me a shot, and I'm on their, you know, on their pro staff now, and I love their baits. You know, go check them out, and they're great guys. You know, we were friends before they even, you know, offered me anything. So that was just as soon as they, you know, gave me an opportunity like that, obviously, you know, be with your buddies and have a great bait like that as well. So yeah, no, well. Working on some more names down the road, but you know, I guess just some hard work and pushing through it. And so, thank you guys.
Oh, Mr. Dustin.
Oh, cool. First and foremost, I want to thank Mr. Chad Brock right here for putting us on this show and giving us at Jackson the platform to to highlight anglers on the team. This is pretty awesome that you do this for us.
Absolutely.
Big time shout out to Jackson Kayak. You know, I've been with them a little while now. So always appreciative of everything there and providing us with some great kayaks to get on the water with. Torquedo Kayak Fishing, stoked to be on with them. Dubro Fishing, thanks Brian Schiller for trusting in me to come on with Dubro. Got some cool stuff coming out with that company. Duke West Camp over at Ketch, I got some great partnerships there. Ketch is definitely one of them, the leading way to measure fish right there. They make some of the best boards in the market. Chopping Block here, I got a partnership with them. Waterloo Rods, Jimmy and crew here in town, always keep me loaded up, keeping the rods bent for them. Z-Pro Lithium, John Rapp, appreciate it. Shimano Fishing, Yak Gadget, Never Lost Gear, and then Robbie Marsh with Coastal Marsh Lures. I've been throwing a lot of his custom Corkies this year and last year. I've always used his stuff, so just started getting hooked up with Robbie as well. So I appreciate him as well, and the family, of course, for sure, for supporting my passion. I mean, addiction. Yeah, thanks to everybody. Thanks to all the sponsors and partners out there. I appreciate all the support.
As always, we want to encourage you guys. If you guys got more questions, want to learn more info, check these guys out on the social. Feel free to DM them, PM them, whatever you kids call it these days. Ask them questions. Ask them tough questions if you have any questions. If you're looking for a good kayak, get on jacksonkayak.com. Check us out. If you're looking for a good cooler, swing on down. Grab you one of them Orion coolers. Orion Rocks will save you a little bit of money at checkout. So use that, all caps, Orion Rocks. And, maybe pick you up a splint like Jesse. Thanks for watching. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another Orion podcast and Jackson Kayak Doc Talk. So we will see you guys then. Take it easy. And, good luck to all our anglers out there fishing this weekend. Good night, everybody. My button quit working. What the heck, man? Just got it back going.
Damn, they don't want us to leave.